You did? Because it's still... Oh, we're live. Hey, we're live. There's nobody watching right now, but that's okay. Because welcome back to a Spoilerverse... Well, Spoilerverse Comics. It's our new thing. And this is spoiler country that you have. We haven't been on in a while, but here we are.
Here we are.
Special engagement. That sounds weird. You hear that?
Why is it crackling?
Is that you?
I think it's me.
Is it your headset?
It might be the headphones.
Anyways, while he's figuring that out, guys, we are here to talk about our new endeavors. We have quite a few things going on here at Spoiler Country. Specifically, what you see at one of these corners, it says Spoilerverse Comics. That's our new publishing house that we're doing. We have the Ainz Anthology is out. It's a comic book. We have Supernatural Baby Detective. That was a successful Kickstarter. Finished in October. We're getting ready to ship out all of the physical copies, which is amazing. And Johnny here has his very own Kickstarter going on right now. He's 71% of his goal.
77%.
Ooh, 77%. Huh? Yeah,
76%, sorry.
76% of the goal is done. We have a low number, so we're just trying to get it pushed over. And if you're a fan of irreverent humor, maybe you like South Park, maybe you like Trailer Park Boys, there's so many. Maybe you like Strangers with Candy, you know, Kids in the Hall. These are all things that Jolie Noly kind of fits right in there. And if that's your audience, if that's your bag, come on, come check it out and give it a chance.
It's a fun, it's fun. I mean, it's stupid, but it's fun. I like it. I enjoy it.
Well, the writing is a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot of stories going on. There's a lot of humor going on. There's dick and fart jokes galore. There's just so much going on in this thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
How long have you been writing Jolie Noly?
15 years. So since 2008.
So what was the catalyst for you to start it? Because I'll be honest, you're pissing me off with this fucking book because you're supposed to be coloring. And every time you're like, oh, I couldn't get to it. And then you'd be like, oh, I couldn't get to your book that I'm supposed to be working on, but look what I did.
There were times where I was like, I don't know if I should show Kendrick this. He's going to yell at me.
I never did.
I wasn't coloring.
But I did get annoyed. There was times that I was annoyed. I'm like, why are you fucking showing me this?
Yeah. Well, so the difference for that
but I get
is,
it.
Is like Jolie Noly I can do while sitting at work on one monitor. I can sit and do stuff and work and do stuff.
But he doesn't do that.
No.
He does not work on other things. He only does work. When he's at work, it's work.
That's it. Just work. But when it's for Supernatural, I have to like focus for it. I can't like, you know, do two things. I have to like sit with my iPad and focus.
Yeah. Couldn't do two things like you are right now.
It's like I tell my kids I'm doing a live stream or I'm doing a podcast and then they decide they have to all text and call me at once. And it's like, I don't.
Well, at least you're texting. When we started in 2017, Jack was what? 4. And so there was no, hey, I'm doing this. It's, I'm here.
There were many times I was like, oh, shit. If we were on video back then, in our first several episodes, you would have seen Jack on my lap with me going, shh. Quiet. He would come sit on my lap when we recorded a lot of the times. Man,
you know what? Talking about the fact that we've been doing this 2017 and we've kind of calmed down. Not kind of, we've calmed down quite a bit. We went from doing it once a week to doing it every day to doing it like once every other month.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah. I want to pick it back up to where we do it like once a week.
Yeah. Once get back to what we started off once a week. It's weird because I see podcasts that started well after us and they're doing really well, which is great.
Yeah.
You know, but I watch how they do things and how they explain, you know, and what they do. And I'm like, oh, you guys are in that stage of your show.
We're in the we want it as easy and simple as possible because our main focus is not the podcast. Our main focus is the SB Comics and our comics. And the podcast is something we do fun to talk to each other and to talk to other people and to talk about the books.
Yep. Yep. So back to my question before I got sidetracked, our classic tangents. What was the catalyst for this year to make you go, maybe this is the year to do it?
So go back a full year to 2022 and I was working on this coloring of this book and I decided, I was like, this is a lot. Your book.
Is there a book you can say?
Your book. But I started working on Supernatural.
No.
When we start, not when I was coloring it, but I was, when did you start writing Supernatural Baby Detective?
January, like earnestly January.
Okay. When did we start talking about it? When did I say I was going to color it? Late 2022.
January, right? February. Yeah. January, February, because it went February. I think I gave you my first full script, like finished, because I had been working on it for a couple years. Like, you know what I mean? Fleshing out the characters, trying to come up with who they are, what they are, what their motivation is, all that kind of fun stuff. And then, but it was February of 2023 that I finished my first actual script. And that's when I gave that, and I gave you that, and we started working on it. Because then it was that in February, I hired Ram. We started editing. You read it. You know what I mean? We started going. And then in March, I had my heart attack.
Right. So what was it then? Because I started working on it in December. Like, what was I doing? So I started transcribing the Ainz anthology into a novel. And I was writing a bunch.
Yeah. What happened to that?
Oh, it's done. It's sitting on my computer right here.
You were so about it though. You were like, I remember you talking about it and doing it. Like, I'm at this many words. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
And then it just went, and then you just never talked about it again.
Well, I did all that and I got all the stories converted over to like prose. And then they're sitting in like a one and a half draft stage where I've gone through it once and I've gone through it a second time. It just needs to be like gone through and like cleaned up. I actually wrote like two new stories for Ainz doing this too. One of them is like complete. It's like novella length. So it's like 30,000 words by itself.
Yeah.
And then while I was doing that, I was like, I have this memoirs of a suicide novel I've been working on for 20 years. And then I started reworking on that again. And while I was focusing on rereading that, I had a friend of mine started reading through it to make notes on it while I was doing it as well. He's like, I asked him, like, can you read through this and like make some notes about things that don't make sense, you know, like, or
yeah,
stuff I can, you know. And while he was doing that, and while I was I'd already finished going through making my notes on it, I was like going through my folder of stuff I have that I've never released. And I was like, you know, I have these 10 issues of Jolene Only that are sitting here. I should just finalize those and put them out. So
she's got these 10 sitting there.
Yeah, these 240 pages. So I started going back through, starting at issue one for like the fifth or sixth time. And I was like, okay, I'm going to go through these one more time. And wherever these end, the end of this go through, they're done. And I'm going to print them and they're never going to touch them again. Never going to edit them again.
Yeah.
So what I did is I went through each issue that I had done, right? I had full pages for, but I never had written a script for him because that's not how I worked with Jolene Only. There was no real scripts for him. But then what I did is I took them and I took each page and I scripted it back into Scrivenger page by page for each book and separated all out into Scrivenger for like by book and by page. So I re-scripted it back into it, went through each script, did some editing without the comic page there. And then I went back through and made my edit changes to the comic book page. And while I was doing that, I then edited it again to update some stuff. And I ended up dropping a bunch of pages that were just like garbage. And then adding new pages to cover that. And then I went through it all edited. I had...
Some of it was very much of the time too, right?
Yeah, some of it was very timely. And some of the stuff was like, it takes place in the year it was put out. I left in there because I thought it was funny. But then I added like explanations of why I left it for whatever reason. But so I did that, and then I had Josh Queen. Josh Queen is the guy who's edited all my books as far as like grammar and spelling and stuff like that, like copy editing. So he went through them all and copy edited them all. Greg read through them all as kind of like our series editor. And then I had been racking my brain about how to release these books. Like I just didn't know how to like get them out there.
I read through them too, just so you guys know. And I caught some editing issues.
He did. And then he also told me that he didn't understand them. So
you know what? I know what it is. I'll tell you offline.
Yeah, that's fine. You just don't like my work. I know what it is. You just don't think I'm a writer.
I love the writing. I actually do love the writing.
The art takes away from it. I know the art's not good. Well, it's not that's not good. The art's not for everybody. The art's very like simplistic. Not simplistic.
It's like South Park, right? Why does South Park work? It's not just the writing, you know, but the art isn't very good either.
No,
but the art is cute.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You look at it, you're like, oh, that's cute. And they can, aww, you know, and the emotions they can express is cute. And that's, I think a lot of things go with that.
Are you saying Jillian Lee is not cute?
I think, well, Kaylee's not an artist.
No, she's not.
And I think what you've done with it, I think there's something there with Joan Lee himself how you make him dress.
Yeah.
Like that little red bow tie, dude. I didn't notice the red bow tie until just like a week ago.
Yeah.
When I started doing all the AI stuff. And sending you all that shitty AI stuff because it just was making me laugh. And I had to describe him into the AI to get it because you can't just put his picture in, right?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, holy shit, he's got a red bow tie. And instantly I started thinking of Hollywood Video because when I worked at Hollywood Video, you had to wear a little red bow tie and a red cummerbund. It was embarrassing. But, you know, it made me laugh. So I think there's a lot there. Don't get me wrong. I think that's what just gets to me sometimes is because the writing can only carry you so far. Like, I don't think Sandman would be Sandman if it was somebody else doing that art.
Yeah.
I don't know. You tell me.
I mean, Sandman has a ton of artists over the years, but yeah, the artists were picked very
well. All amazing. Stories. And that first book though, I think is the best.
Yeah. Sam Keith.
For my money, that guy, when I first read that book and I saw that art, I was like blown away. I was like, oh my God. It was like the first time seeing Bernie Wrightson.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They're very akin to style.
But those are, it's like a completely different spectrum. It's a shitty example.
I mean, Jillian Only, Sam, it's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
The writing quality is the same, right?
I think people need to read it because there is a lot of jokes and it is funny, especially because you have to think about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There's stuff you have to think about in there. It's not just a bunch of stupid jokes. There's like actual, like I was telling on one podcast I was on, like there's the stuff that's in there for like that goes.
There's some Rick and Morty in there.
It is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And like the stuff that's like talking about like facts or like history, it's real stuff. It's stuff that I actually researched, like a fucking school project, researched it and got the real, like made sure it was correct before I put it in there.
And yeah,
it was a lot of fun. And there's a lot of inside jokes in there. I mean, a lot. I mean, there's literally a panel where I call out Casey and nobody's going to know that except for us and Casey, if he ever reads it, you know, and there's panels where I call out. Yeah. Well, don't you remember he was like, you shouldn't have more than 25 words in a panel. Right.
Oh yeah. He kept telling me that. And then I was like writing and I'm like, and it stuck in my head and it drove me nuts. And then I was like, wait a minute, this is my book.
Yeah.
And I can break the rules. And I can do what I want.
Yeah, there are so many books that have more than 25 words. And so I wrote it.
I think it's a good rule of thumb not to bore the reader, right? Yeah. And to have too much information. It's a good rule of thumb. But sometimes you just need 40 words.
Yeah.
Well, it's that's for your editor too. That's the thing. Yeah. It's for your editor. Your editor can help you cut that down.
Right. I did not cut
it. You just have to allow them to do it.
Yeah, that panel is
my biggest problem.
118 words, I think, total for that one panel that I call it, that I call what? Casey out in. Yeah,
that's awesome. You got to tell me the book and page number because I want to read it.
Yeah, now. I think it's in book book four, book five of issue four of issue five of this book is in there. But yeah, it's basically, it's like, it's a caption box at the end says, Casey says you should only have 24 words per panel. This is 108. So fuck him. Well, this is 118 now. It's something like that that I wrote in there. And I thought it was hilarious. I sent it to him. And he was like, you asshole. I'm like, yeah, I know. But it's funny because, like, look at the cover here. It's funny the art is so crappy because I can clearly draw stuff, right? I can clearly
do that. Doesn't even go. What part is that? Is that just you?
That's not in the book. That's just me. And then, like, grabbing my head and, like, the top of it is like all the issues coming out.
Folks, that's John circa 2008. Because he doesn't have the hair anymore.
It's very much gray. And what's hilarious though is I always draw myself clean shaven and like all these things. I was never clean shaven. I have had a beard since I was in high school, since like senior year.
You've always had like a beard or a goatee or something. Some kind of beard.
But for the comic, I always, and you know what it was is
I
don't want to be annoyed with drawing beards all the time.
Yeah.
And it was easier to draw a jawline. So that's how I got it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But that makes sense. How cathartic has doing John Lee Nolan been?
So
we're getting it to this point.
It's been incredibly cathartic. The only problem is like, I always worry about people's reaction to it and reception of it because a lot of it is, it's not personal so much as it's just like a very story that I love. It's a series I love. It's not a story, but it's a series that I love so much because it's so much fun for me to create these pages and do this stuff.
Yeah.
And I always worry that like people aren't going to like it. I kind of got over that because I'm like, you know what? If people don't like it, they don't like it. It's not for them.
Yeah.
I know this series is a hard sell. I know getting people to like this, it's a hard sell. But the people who are going to like this, they're going to love this. And there's going to be people who like this because I've had people read it and some people love it, some people hate it. There's like no in between. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that because this series, I really make it for myself, right? And there's a lot to it. It's easier for me to write. It's easier for me to keep them going. And I have a lot of fun doing it in the background of doing other stuff. Well, or in the foreground of when I'm doing your book.
Yeah. But I don't know. I think you hit it on the nail on the head. I think it just needs to find, we just need to find the right audience.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really fans of irreverent humor is the people that are going to, that truly love irreverent humor. I mean, if it's 2023 and you're still watching Meatballs, seriously, this is the book for you.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You know?
Well, and yeah,
it's a lot of fun.
Well, and what's going to be great too is as we go through, right? Cause there's like, as I said to you before, this is book one, issues 1 through 5. Book two is already done as well. It's issues 6 through 10.
You mean arc two or volume two?
Yeah, volume two is done. It's issue.
Yeah. Volume one's done. Volume two is done. Isn't volume three done as well?
Volume three has, it's got an issue and a half left to get art done for it. And it's done. It's written.
So this is another thing. I think we need to start showcasing volume two and three with the change of art.
So volume two is the same art.
Huh?
Volume two is the same art. It's volume three when art changes.
Yeah. Well, I think it's important. I think people will see that, it's not about that. The art has nothing to do with how good the books are, but it does show evolution.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're changing the game of what it is and you're growing. And if they want to join you on this journey to see where it goes, now's the time to jump in.
Yeah. And like, it's hard. It's going to be hard for people to understand this at this point right now, but there is an overarching story between volume one, volume two, volume three, all the way through volume four. Like there is a big story that takes place through all of this that once you read all of it, you're like, oh, it all kind of makes sense now. But you read volume one, like, oh, this is just a bunch of stupid ass humor jokes. And like, there's some stuff here. There's kind of some stories here. They go see Star Wars and they talk a lot about Star Wars. They go, and they did a Christmas special with a pot leaf and a talking pot leaf and a bunny rabbit who tries to rape them for some reason. And like all this crazy shit. But then you get to volume two and some of that kind of comes back into play, kind of goes there. And then by volume three and volume four, it kind of all makes sense what's happening. And it kind of makes sense why the art changes so drastically on issue 11, the first issue of volume three. There's a very good in-world reason why the art changes from the art that you see on the books to...
Yeah, you just break the fourth wall all over the place.
Oh, the fourth wall breaks. There is no fourth wall in this book. Like,
what
the
was
characters are self-aware. The characters break out of the comic and talk to me. I'm in... My photos of me talking to the characters are in the comic. I'm a character in the comic, which is stupid.
Do you... Did that come from early Marvel, like the She-Hulks?
No.
Because they were famous. I mean, because they were doing that well before Deadpool was doing it.
Well, and I don't know. She-Hulk's the first one. She-Hulk was the first character to do that. No, it came from... I honestly don't know where it came from. It came from the fact that, like... I don't know. I think it has to do with the fact that there's always a lot of things in my head talking to me when I'm creating things. And I don't mean, like, I hear voices in my head, but I mean, like, I'm writing a joke. While I'm writing a joke, I'm thinking of a secondary joke for that joke to explain that joke. And then the reason why I put myself in the comic is I always found it funny when things happen and you get, like, something stupid happens in a book or a TV show or a movie and it gets called out. And I thought, what better way to call it out than to just call out the shitty writing or the shitty art, have the characters be acknowledged that they're drawn like crap. And have them be mad about it and have them talk, like yell at the artist for it and have them yell at the writer for putting him in bad situations. Or like there's an issue in here where the character
Barbie does that.
Yeah.
They do that in the Barbie movie.
I haven't seen the Barbie movie yet, but
there's a great scene in the Barbie movie where the narrator literally says, this is the scene where Barbie has a self-realization on image. And having Margot Robbie as plain Barbie is probably not the best choice because she's too pretty.
Yeah, that's hilarious. But it
reminds me of that.
Yeah. There's a couple of pages in this book where the character Jeffers, I think it's issue. I want to say, actually, I don't know. It might be in the next book. I don't remember. It's one of the issues. But anyways, where Jeffers is telling, he repeats a joke. He says a joke twice. Right.
Yeah.
Because Jeffers tells cringy joke. He's a bad joke teller. Like just the dumbest, like third grade jokes you can think of is what Jeffers likes to tell. And he repeats a joke, the same joke he said the end of one issue, he repeats in the next issue. And he's like, wait a minute, why the fuck did I still tell the same joke? And so then he breaks out of the comic and comes to talk to me, to yell at me for making him tell the same joke. And there's a whole byline, a whole sub story of me, like, of me being like, I'm just overworked. I'm just getting tired. I don't want to do this anymore, blah, blah. Then it's like, he gets mad at me and talks me into doing more stuff. And then it goes, there's conversations back and forth about this stuff in the comic. And to me, it's funny. To me, it's hilarious to have the characters break out and talk to me. I know it's stupid. I don't care. I think it's awesome.
No, it's fun. It's not stupid. It's fun. And you put a lot of work and heart and soul into this.
Oh yeah, for sure. Just wait until people read like all of it and they'll see where this goes. Cause it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you, so this was born from a web comic.
Yep.
In 2008.
Yep. In 08.
Yeah. And then are those still online? Are they gone?
No. I took all my web comics offline, all like 4,000 pages worth offline in 2016.
Wow.
So It was funny. Cause I did that in anticipation to do like more serious writing and comic work. So I wanted to like take all my dumb jokes off for a while so I could focus on like
you wanted people to take you serious, not the dick
exactly
and butt guy.
Exactly. So I did that, but then I did Irons, and Irons is great. I love Irons, and I'll finish Irons. I have it on my roadmap to get Irons book 2.
Well, we have to do issue 2 because we put an ad at the at the back of Supernatural Baby Detective.
Oh yeah, I've got it. It's on my roadmap of stuff I'm working on. But
yeah, you said it's coming out in 2024. So
I thought it was in 2025.
Nope.
Yep. Well, I better get on it then. So I'm not a liar. Well, book 2 is mostly done. Book 2 is like 65% done. So I just had to go finish it.
Famous last words from John Horsley.
I know. Yeah, totally.
Let me ask you, since we were talking about Irons, is book 2 another anthology, or are we getting more of a linear story? Because here's the difference. So I like to point this out because I think I'm in the minority right now. I'm getting kind of tired of anthologies because there's so many of them, you know, and they're just not for me. You know, I like them every once in a while. You know, I like more of the horror anthologies than I like other types, but even that it's whatever. I'm excited to read. I got one of the Cthulhu Invades. So I'm kind of excited to read that, but I thought it was a linear story. And then after I purchased it, I found out, oh, it's an anthology, which is fine because independent people, I wanted to support them anyway. So it's fine. Sure. And I'm excited. I'm still really excited to read it, but Ainz was different to me because it was an anthology, but it was an anthology a theme anthology. It was family, and it was following a family through history and different things happening, but there was a linear story that was underneath that most anthologies just don't have.
Right.
They just have things that are there.
And if I could similar. go back in time, I wouldn't put the word anthology in the name of the book. I would have
changed
the name of the book. Yeah. Because I realized I called it
just called the Ainz family.
I would define something, right? But I called it an Ainz anthology because when I was creating it, I was thinking it not as an anthology of like an anthology you see around, but as like, it's an anthology of stories from this family, right? Because the whole concept is this family of the Ainz fights the monsters and shit, and it is the Ainz family library that they all send their stories to.
Yeah.
And this book is an anthology, a collection of those stories that are being sent to the Ainz library about their interaction with it. Plus, there's also an underlying story with the character Code and the demon Camelot, and Code is reading these stories and living through some of them, and Camelot is trying to stop him, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the whole point of it is like this character Code can live through the stories as he's reading them. So when you find out that while he's reading these books at the library and he's researching these stories, trying to find Camelot, he's not only just watching them, he's there, but you don't know he's there until later.
Yeah.
But if I would go back, I would take out the word anthology because I think it gives it the wrong impression, because it's not really an anthology. It's an anthology in so much it is a collection of short stories done by various creative teams, but there's an overarching arc, and I was involved in every single story to make sure it fit into this family storyline.
Right.
So to answer your question, yes, book two is similar to book one in the fact that it is a collection of short stories told over time by a varying group of creators. And I've worked to get it all in line together.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that'll be exciting when it actually comes together. Yeah,
some of the stories are kind of standalone as stories. And some of the stories, you learn more about characters and events from the first book as well.
Right. Right. And are we having any hunters?
I mean, they're all kind of hunters, but not really.
Jack Ainz, secret agents, hunters of Krampus. Any more of those?
I don't know. Are you going to write it? That's your baby, man.
I don't know. I've never been asked.
If you write it and it's good, I'll put it in. Same rules as last time.
No, don't do that. I forced you to do it.
No, I like the Krampus. My only issue with your Krampus story is I wish we would have made it like a page or two longer.
Yeah, well, you told me I couldn't do that.
I know, but I'm saying, looking back,
you can only have 3 pages. I was like, all right. And then you told me, if it's not good, I'm not going to put it in. That's fine. And then you're like, oh, and now I've had several people tell me, that was my favorite story in there.
Right. And it should have been, yes. We should have stretched it out to like 5 or 6 pages, not 3 pages, because there's a lot happening. And but it is a really good, like, short glimpse into Nancy Ainz, right?
It
jumps into her world. It drops you in and then pulls you out. I do kind of wish you would have expanded it like double the length, so we could have been dropped in, learned a little bit more, and then be pulled out before.
Well, that could have been its own. That character. Well, you didn't have an idea for her. I just had a time frame of when she was. And I was actually shocked that nobody had chosen her. And I was so glad, because you didn't have any kind of holiday theme.
No holiday stuff, no 90s stuff at the time.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I'm going to do a Christmas holiday. I'm going to do a Christmas time, because it was Christmas time.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a Christmas story. And then you're like, okay, you only be 3 pages. Okay, that's easy. And then I just thought of Krampus. I was like, oh, Nancy Ein's Krampus Killer. And it just, the title fit. And then Scott Godlewski just knocked it out of the park.
He did. Hey, I colored that story.
Yeah. And that's what made me go, oh, dude, you should be thinking about doing coloring. But I think you're good for like 2-3 pages. And then after that, you get bored, or you just like, your ADHD takes over. You're like, I'm not going to focus on this. Or you need a year to do like a 24 pages. You need a year. And then you'll be like, yeah, if I have a year, then you're going to get like 2-3 days on one page, and I'll knock it out within that time frame. But yeah.
Yeah.
I
like coloring. I think I'm relatively decent at it. It just, my biggest problem with it is, it's not that like it takes me forever. It's just that like, it's, I have to find dedicated time to do it. Right. I need to know if I'm going to do it, I'm going to be able to do it for like at least 2 or 3 hours without being interrupted or not having to stop. And most of
that's
the time,
just not your life right now.
Have that in my life. So
you got another 8 years before that's even possible.
Yeah. Like, I would love to keep coloring more stuff because it's a lot of fun. I love coloring by hand. I love doing hand colors. Like, I originally wanted to color Superman's Great Detective by hand. I wanted to print it out and basically watercolor it and paint it. But I just wasn't able to.
I tell you what, man. The one thing with Jonely Nonely is that you did it in vectors. And so it's very modern in that respect, you know? But there's something missing in today's comics where everything's digital. No one's doing all hand drawings and then coloring and then, you know, and then scanning it in. We are both lucky because Ron Randall did a print for you.
Painting.
Yeah. Yeah. And he did a watercolor painting for me for Supernatural. And there's just something magical about it. You know, when you're looking at it, I
believe that traditional digital comics, where they draw them on iPad stuff, they look really good. Like, there's a lot of cool stuff, but I like ink on paper.
There's just something about it. There's just something magical about it that you're not getting. And I don't know. I mean, the writing has to get there. I mean, luckily the writing doesn't change, right?
Yeah.
Well, as long as it's not just AI.
Dude, I got something to tell you about that. It's pissing me off, but
yeah, but there's something missing. And I think there's a secondary market that these guys are missing out on. You know, I got that original Supergirl page and I have the pencils and the inks from Ron Randall that are real, you know, nobody has that. I'm the only person that has that now.
I know.
It's
pretty awesome.
Yeah. And the fact that it's just, I don't know, man, there's something about it and it's missing. So what are you going to say about AI?
So there's a guy on TikTok that is getting a lot of flack right now, rightfully so. And that is, the comic community is very much, I want to say, not super happy with this dude. So he's an actor. He was on the revival of Dexter. He has a book called Whist.
Wait, the revival of Dexter. I saw that. Who did he play?
He played, I don't know. He's some, I'll look it up for you.
Is he a young guy?
He's probably in his 30s.
I wonder if he's the guy that played Dexter's son.
He is. He played. Well, he wasn't a main character, apparently. He's on a couple episodes. Let's see. What's his name?
Oh, all right. So anyway, that's okay.
No, I got to know. It's Stephen M. Robertson.
Oh, okay. How did I miss this?
He wrote a graphic novel, right?
Okay.
Who did he play, Dexter? He played Matt Caldwell in Dexter.
Okay.
So he wrote a graphic novel called Whist, and I've seen him on TikTok, and he's like promoting this graphic novel that he did, and it looks all cool, and it's like a dark, like horror graphic novel and stuff, and it's cool and stuff. Lo and behold, the dude used, it's an AI-assisted graphic novel. So he used AI to help with the script, and he used AI to create the art for this graphic novel.
Whoa, so the AI did all the art?
I don't know how much it is. It's saying it says it contains a hybrid of digitally drawn and AI-generated art with strong elements of horror. So he hasn't, like, released how much of it was done by AI and how much was done, you know, by a person.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, and what's pissing people off about it, and I don't know, I don't quite know where I fit on this spectrum, is he sold like 30 or 40,000 copies on TikTok of this book.
Yeah.
And he wrote it and did the art for it in 30 days.
Ooh.
Yeah.
It can't be a very good story then.
I haven't read it or anything, but people are getting pretty irritated, not irritated, but like on TikTok, they're talking about him. Like, yeah, this guy, this actor, made a graphic novel in 30 days and brags about using AI for it. And he's sold 30, 40,000 copies on TikTok. And all these other people are putting in, you know, blood, sweat, and tears doing it without the AI, or selling, you know, 100 copies, 10 copies.
This guy right here. I think I sold 71 copies on Kickstarter so far.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, is he selling so many copies because he's an actor, so he's using that? And
that's,
he's like,
that's a huge part of it, you getting in front of the people. You know, like, I think if you and I used AI to produce something in 30 days, you still have the problem of getting in front of people.
Yeah.
And getting them interested.
I think it's more that than the AI portion of it. I think it's more that he's an actor, he was on Dexter, he's on other shows, he's...
Yeah.
Clearly
he has a built-in audience.
A built-in audience. He's clearly charismatic, so he knows how to work the crowd and shit.
Right.
More than it being like an AI generated thing. Because I mean, I've seen this on TikTok for a good couple of months. I never knew it was an AI thing until literally yesterday when I saw some TikToks on it. And then I looked it up. I was like, oh yeah, this is an AI generated comic book.
Yeah. I'm not opposed for AI doing some lifting on certain things. Like I could see somebody using AI to generate ideas or to pull out to create an outline or to help, you know, or to help with the calendar or to do mundane remedial tasks.
No problem with that.
Yeah. I think my problem would be if people are creating some type of linear art. That doesn't even have to be linear, just art in general, and then selling it like it's just their own. And because
a lot of that is the AI art that's being created is literally stealing designs from other artists.
It learns what it finds on the internet and then mimics. It might change some things. It blends things and does, you know, but it's still taking 10 things to create one, but it didn't come up with those 10 things.
Yeah.
You know, all these other people did. And that's one of the things they need to figure out, is you need to be able to source where AI generates their images from to create the image that they come up, what it comes up with, and then give credit to those people. And then on top of that, you're going to have to start paying those people because you're using their ideas.
Well, that's a good point, but also
keep talking. I can hear you.
Yeah, it's a good point. But if I go and create an art piece and I pull inspiration from 10 different artists and create an art piece that has elements of those 10 different artists and I do it by hand, how is that different than me doing the same thing with AI where it pulls from different artists and takes elements from
each artist? Because you're putting the work into it. You are self-actualizing that. If I'm using a program and I just type in what I want and it's going out and just taking those pieces, who's learning? Who is actually using that experience to create that? You're doing an actual experience.
I get that. But I think the point isn't involved who's getting the experience. The point is, if we think that the AI program should give credit to the artist that it pulls to make an image, shouldn't an artist who pulls inspiration from other artists and other images to create an image give credit to those artists as well?
Why? I don't think it's the same. I don't think that's apples to apples. I think there's difference, because I believe that you have life experiences, and the way that you are using and inferring that art is completely different. The AI will literally take pieces of things and just use it. You know what I mean? They're almost copy it verbatim, and then they'll call it their own. I think there's an inherent difference between a machine doing it and a human being doing it. And because it's like music, right? People can talk about, take any artist, right? They are built from the total sums of their experiences and the music that they've listened to. That's how they come to who they are. And because there's not much, you know, Ed Sheeran did a great piece where he was doing an interview. He goes, name any song and I can play any song you name with these four chords.
Yeah.
And he did, you know, and it's like, okay, I think there's a complete difference from the way the AI interprets and then molds and then presents compared to how a human being interprets, takes their experiences and then presents. And also an AI knows exactly where it's taking its experiences from. A human doesn't, you know, because you could be pulling something from when you're 5 years old.
Right.
You know what I mean? The sum of parts is completely different. And the way it's relatable is completely different.
Yeah. I'm not trying to defend AI.
I know you're not.
Is it actually different? I mean, I think it is too, but I can see the argument of people being like, well, they're doing the same thing. Why don't they have to give credit? Or they can say like, well, you're saying like, well, it takes my experiences to make it. Well, they can say, well, I have to give my prompts to write the prompts of those prompts that I'm giving the AI generator uses my experience, but I don't think it's the same thing.
So, no, it's not the same thing. And plus you've earned it.
Yeah.
You've earned it by living, not just typing it into a computer and saying, cause like I did all those AI images for Johnly Knownly for just that we could use. And I think for marketing, it's different, you know, and they're stupid. It's nothing that you would actually use, but I think it's just funny because, they just, you know, but I didn't earn any of that. I would never take credit for, hey, look what I came up with. I literally took a picture of Johnly, described him into, I said, 20 something year old with black, short black hair with a red bow tie, a black t-shirt that says all types of sextants with an arrow down with, you know what I mean? I literally described him. And then at the end I said Muppet style.
Yeah.
That's what I don't deserve any credit for what it came up with. You know what I mean? And I don't think the AI deserves, Jim Henson deserves credit for coming up with Muppets. Yeah. You know what I mean? And I think if any artist that was worth the salt, if they're going to do things, they would still at least say thank you to Jim Henson.
Yeah.
You know, that did anything. AI is not, you know,
there's a fun debate on Twitter for people who use AI art from like AI artists. And I use quotes because, you know, I have a hard time. Cause like, I try not to be like, so, oh, this is the way you have to do this one way for art. Cause I think art is subjective. I think art can be anything. I literally think art can be anything you find as passionate, creative, or anything like that. But I have a hard time with AI artists calling themselves artists a little bit right now, because one, it's this whole new thing. I'm not seeing the creativity in AI art in so much of, yes, there's a lot of prompting and a lot of things you have to write up to like get what you want. But is that a creative process or is that just trial and I don't know. But anyways, there's a whole debate on Twitter between like an AI artist and non-AI artist going back and forth about why one feels they're an artist and why one feels they're not an artist. And at the end of the day, it's like, at the end of the day, people are going to create how they can create, right? And part of me is like, if people are using AI to create something, at least they're using creative juices. So that is good. But don't try and sell it yet. Don't try and like commercialize it, I guess.
Right.
Use it for like inspiration. Use it for reference. Use it for like ideas, I think is fine. But I think what comes into creation is the actual, like the pro, like you mentioned, the process of like taking your experiences and creating something versus, oh God.
I mean, come on.
That's hilarious.
AI generated. And you know, what's funny is I try to do an Amazing Spider-Man 300 cover.
Yeah.
with Joan Lee as a Muppet, and this is what it came up with. But
it can't get the words right.
Yeah, it can't get the words right. It will all sorts of thy sexiness. That's actually kind of very funny. And but
all sorts of me sexiness.
But literally all I did was describe what he's wearing and then said Muppet.
Yeah.
I don't deserve any credit for that. It's ridiculous.
It is funny though.
It is funny though. Yeah. I mean, I think that this one's my favorite.
Oh God, Calverina.
Yeah. It just makes me laugh because it's like, oh my God, are you serious right now?
Yeah, that's pretty fucking on brand for him too, and funny shit.
Yeah, it looks pretty good, you know. Yeah. But you know, I'm not opposed to using that for some stupid marketing for Kickstarter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just to like put on Instagram as a one-time thing. But we're also not in front of 2 million people. You know what I mean? We're gonna get 10 people seeing it.
Yeah. And we're gonna say, look at this stupid image, look at this stupid thing AI created.
Yeah, we're gonna clearly say AI did this.
Yeah,
you know, as this a joke.
Stupid. Yeah.
But it's funny.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's how AI should be used when it comes to this realm. I don't think you should do any more than that. But
yeah,
you know, it's sad because that whole Marvel show on Disney with Samuel Jackson, the
Secret Invasion.
Yeah, Secret Invasion. The whole intro was done by AI. And it made me sad. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And that kind of made me sad because that's a billion-dollar company that doesn't need to use AI, that saved a couple of schmeckles because they didn't want to pay really for somebody to create this amazing intro. And the sad thing is the intro was pretty cool, but I bet you a really good artist could have made it even better.
Yep. I'm so far behind on Marvel stuff, man.
Oh, so
I remember there was a time when we both would have watched all the Marvel shit, but like, there's so much. I've watched 2 episodes of Secret Invasion. I didn't even know Loki was out. And
yeah,
it's done already. I haven't seen the Marvels yet, which I hear it's decent. It didn't do well, but I hear it's a decent movie.
Yeah.
There's like so much else I haven't seen. I know there's is there another show out that I seen in the movie? I mean, I don't think I still haven't seen Guardians 3.
I saw Guardians 3.
Which is crazy because like there was a time where I would see all these first day, but now it's like,
yeah,
I don't have time. There's
I don't have time and I'm doing my own stuff. I'm putting my own stuff out there.
Yeah.
And I get sick of hearing all the political jargon around everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm just done. I'm like, I don't want to hear it anymore. I really don't care of them swapping genders out or emphasizing girls over guys for a couple movies or somebody's race or go woke, go broke or any of that. I just don't care about it anymore. You know, I'm just going to do my own stuff, watch my own stuff, listen to, you know, I'll listen to things I want to listen to. I'll read things I want to read. I'll watch things I want to watch. And I just don't think I'm going to podcast and get into discussions about them anymore because it always turns up to be some stupid political mess. And I just get sick of hearing it.
I know this podcast about our stuff and have conversations about fun stuff.
What's that?
I know this podcast about our books and our stuff and talk to people and have fun with it versus talk about, I mean, they don't need us to talk about their movies. You know, that's what I realized.
No. No, they have plenty of marketing and we're not getting paid. That's the thing. I think back about all the time we wasted talking about things that other people were doing and, you know, talking to people that are in TV shows and movies. And, you know, we talked to some pretty big names, man. And even in comic books, like all these people that we talked to that work for Marvel and DC and do all these big projects. And it's like, What? You don't need me.
No, I don't want to talk to the independent people. I want to talk to the
You're not calling me when you're in town saying, hey, let's go get coffee and bullshit. Right.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like I cared more about them than they cared about me.
Oh, for sure. And there was no reciprocation. And I mean, I hate to be the bearer of bad news for people out there for like listening to those kind of shows, but there's no reciprocation. They go on the show, they do their thing, and you never hear from them again. They never share it out, they never talk about it, and
yeah,
you don't get anything back from it. So you get, you know,
and most of the time, if they act like they do, it's all fake.
Yeah, and there was no like real bump from these people being on the show either. Like,
nope.
Our biggest bump was because we were consistent. We had a lot of stuff going out. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm glad we're back to doing just what we want to do, talking about what we want to talk about and making books and doing Spoilerverse comics. Cause
dude,
this is where it's at, man. This is where it's fun.
Yeah. You're having fun, right? You're putting out a product you've been working on since 2008, Jonely Nonely, and whether it does well or not, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. And it only takes one thing where somebody goes, oh my God, this is hilarious. And then they highlight it and they put it out and it goes viral and you're laughing your ass off.
Yep. Pretty much. And it'll happen. Somebody will love this book. That's all I'm going to say.
Yep. Yep. Check it out. Kickstarter.com. Actually, just go to JonelyNonely.com. Take you right to that Kickstarter. And you know, if you don't want to get the physical copies, just get the digital, give it a read, you know?
Yeah.
And I guarantee you're going to chuckle at least once in every issue.
Give it a read and then let me know if you like it or not. I can take, yeah, for Jonely Nonely, I can take the criticism. I usually don't like criticism for my stuff, but for Jonely Nonely, you can tell me you don't like it. That's totally fine. And you can tell me what you don't like about it. That's totally fine. I'm happy to hear it.
You know, what's funny is I haven't had anybody tell me they don't like Supernatural.
Yeah.
You know, but I know it's not for everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
I like it.
It just can't be. So yeah, you're not going to offend me by saying, you know, I mean, I don't know why you go out of your way to contact me to tell me that you don't like it. You know what I mean? Just don't read it. But if you feel the need, you're not going to hurt my feelings and I'm not going to hate you over it either.
True.
Cause there might be something else I do that you like.
Yeah.
You know what made me laugh? And I'm going to let you go here cause it's getting late.
Yeah.
But you posted Jonely Nonely on Facebook and yeah, my mom, my sweetheart of a mom, has to respond and says, is this something you'd let your kids read?
Oh, did she? I didn't see it.
Did you not see that?
No, I'm barely on Facebook ever. I made a post because Greg told me to make posts on my personal Facebook, so I did.
Every time my mom goes full on conservative, very religious, very I don't know how to say it. She's a sweetheart. I mean, she bends over backwards. Even if she doesn't like what you're doing, she still gives everybody a chance. And, you know, but I still blame Kaylee every time I see my mom on Facebook complaining about something I'm doing. Because she's the one who put her on Facebook. And I'm like, why?
Wow.
Why did you do this?
Yeah, I thought about that when I posted. Like, I wonder if Gigi's gonna see this or not. Then I was like, if she does, she does. It'll
whatever. Well, yeah. Well, that's why everybody. So every time I posted about Supernatural, you know, people like make it public, make it shareable, and I'm like, that just opens it up. That just opens it up for ridicule from her, you know. And it's 49 years old. And getting ridiculed for my mother still affects me.
Still hurts, man. Still hurts. Right.
Yeah. Well, it's not that it hurts. It just bums me out that she still takes the religion portion of it so inherent. It's so inherent in her that she can't let it go, and that she has to say something that, you know. And it's like, oh my God, this isn't the 1920s.
Yeah.
You know,
just let people be people. Just let people do their thing.
Yeah. All right, guys. JonelyNonely.com. Check it out. We'll see you guys soon. Oh, we have somebody watching.
Yeah, one watcher. Bye, one
see
watcher.
See ya.